third for setting a screen.
He starts a physical play, although George Taylor just got caught with a moving screen.
Pick and roll. And a foul. Offensive foul coming up. Dead battle box. Get it right there.
Pizzo's dying for a moving screen.
You are listening to the Moving Screen Podcast. I'm Brendan Quinn with The Athletic. I'm here with Dylan Burkhart of UM Hoops. This is the midweek pod, a phenomenon that is sweeping the country, Dylan. I mean, the people have spoken, and they are mad for the midweek pod.
Back by popular demand.
Crazy. Yeah, everyone wanted more, so here we go. We've got a lot to talk about on this episode of The Moving Screen. A very controversial week for Michigan basketball, and a very, very solid, great, some might say, win for Michigan State on the road at Wisconsin. So, obviously, have to start with Michigan and the theatrics at the Bryce Jordan Center. The Bryce Jordan Center hasn't seen that much action since, like, probably Aerosmith performed there in, like, 1997 or something like that. So, let's get into it, man. What were your first blush on the Beeline ejection? What do you got?
I don't really know where to start. So he has been ejected once before, which was what, in the 70s? Is that right?
I think it was like something like 78 that. Or 79 or something.
78,
like that.
79, something like that. He clearly knows what it takes to get ejected.
Yeah.
I guess I'm unclear. I don't know. I guess
this is a non-answer here.
No, people are here for the takes. I thought you were going to lead us off with this one.
Well, okay. So I was not there. I was in Madison, obviously, with Michigan State because that is a better game. I regret not being at State College, but you know, I don't think anyone can blame that decision. It was the obvious choice. But anyway, so it's hard to not have been there. And I've seen that, like, one angle of the camera that's behind the backboard that does seem to kind of show that the second Tech came with him walking away. Is that how you interpret things?
It definitely looked like the second technical, both refs had kind of walked toward the scores table, and he said one more thing while he was walking away, and they both turned, is what I thought it looked like to me.
Right. So here's part of the problem, is that it was halftime. And you got to leave the court. So if they said, like, you know, get off the floor right now, don't say another word, and he said another word, well, then, you know, you're going to get banged with the second tech. Like, the first one might have been, I don't know, up in the air. It's really hard if you don't know what was
said. It's hard because you don't know what exactly was going on.
Right.
And it did look like they went to the monitor to look at something.
Yes.
I assume it was the screen or the last shot or something. Like, I think at one point he was telling them to look at the monitor, I don't know, for the moving screen or what it was. So that could have been why he was, I guess, still on the court. And I guess maybe they came back and said, like, we're just kind of guessing because we don't really know. He gave no comment on what anything was happening, right? He just said he would have a conversation with the league office. So it's hard to kind of decipher the nuts and bolts of what exactly was going on. I mean, Penn State had been called for 3 fouls in the first half, so right. I'm sure he was pretty fed up from that. And then it did look like a hard screen on Simpson. That I mean, I understand that. It was surprising to see him just kind of lose it like that and get tossed from a game we've never seen.
Yeah, before. I mean, he was hot. I mean, I don't think it was out of line for him to get one tech for that, right?
Yeah, and the way that the second tech went down makes you think that he said some choice words.
I think he made it worth it for sure.
Yeah,
there was I've been presented with the theory he was trying to get run, and there is zero chance that that is true. It goes back into the theory of like what in any way in a 40-year career is there any ounce of evidence that he would want to get run out of a game or not coach a second half? I mean, like,
he's been saving that strategy career.
For the 45th time, it's like, people, how do you not kind of get this guy yet? There's no chance he was trying to get thrown out to prove a point. That's ridiculous.
I could see trying to get a technical maybe.
That's
like,
fine.
I buy that, but you can't get kicked out of the game. You can't give up four free throws to start the second half, which makes a it turned into a, I think, 15-point game at that point, 16-point game.
Right.
And you, like, that's a big, just a free, you're giving away free points, which is not really something that I don't think, I think he would not really think that situation through and think, well, I'm going to get booted here and then everyone's going to be fired up and we're going to just rip war through the second half. It's not really his
style. And they almost did. When I saw the lead was five, I was like, oh, Michigan's going to win that game. But the, so officials, though, this is the very much the hot topic of conversation. I know you got some thoughts. So for full disclosure, you know, this is coming from the perspective of two guys who you send one tweet and it's, you know, just a deluge of people in your mentions complaining about the officiating and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I get it. Every team gets cheated and every official is against every team and blah, blah, blah. Like, so we're coming from it probably a little bit more jaded than the average folk who watch these games. So I just wanted to put that preface out there before we get into this, because some people might get pissed or think that we're trying to like mock anything, but that's not the goal. So on that note, Dylan, kind of what are your thoughts here?
That game was not well officiated. There was a missed double dribble in the second half. That was one of the most comical.
There was
a play
on Xavier Simpson where he just got like tackled four times in the middle of the floor. And yeah, I mean, and yes, that's fine.
I think there's a lot of cognitive bias that goes into how you see the officials. I think, like anyone, the officials you see more, you're going to see make more bad calls. Mm-hmm. And I actually think that makes people not appreciate some of the better officials that do a lot of Big Ten games. Like, everyone was on, like, I think it was what Weimer did the Wisconsin game, and everyone was tweeting about how Terry Weimer. I think people would rather have Terry Weimer officiate a game than some of these guys who maybe do the B, C, and D Big Ten games. Yep. And I think you kind of see that with just games that are called wildly inconsistently compared to, I guess, if you have one of the A crews. I think that in the end, officiating does all play out and kind of end up in the same spot because refs make bad calls for both teams. And I don't think it's you remember naturally the calls that go against your team or the calls that you watch in the game that you watched. But really, it's just about looking for that consistency. And I think it's pretty clear that there are some referees doing Big Ten games this year that are not that good. And I think you look at some of the things that draw up controversy, like Ted Valentine, the whole thing last year. Mm-hmm. People would much rather have Ted Valentine officiating some of these games than some of the guys that you're seeing out there in Big Ten games this year. I mean, I know people are all up in arms about the end of the Nebraska-Minnesota game last night. Did you see that one?
Nebraska-Minnesota. I did. Oh, the
foul on the last possession.
Then Pitino went after the guy.
Yeah, and it just seems like it's every game almost at this point. So I don't know. Where do you kind of fall in on this issue?
So first of all, there's a lot going on here. And, you know, part of it is that obviously the league's have guys contracted that, so it's just going to be this kind of cycle of the same guy. So eventually, because of the nature of the job, you're going to miss a call or make a bad call for every team. And now, in the age of social media, where these guys' names are public, daily, and widely known. Like, I remember back in the day going to, like, a lot of St. Joe's games and stuff like that, that there was like one guy in the A-10 who everyone knew, and like everyone knew his name, but the other guys, like, no one knew who any of these people were. And I imagine it was the same way here, but now because of Twitter and guys like you and me or any other media tweeting the three names of every official, like, people know who Lewis Garrison is and things like that. So because of that, I think people are more able to easily kind of attach blame to individuals, and this guy's out for us, and, you know, some of these guys are kind of turning into the boogeyman and blah, blah, blah. And I don't really think
it's also
that's the,
a couple things to add. Officials do not work in crews. They are hired individually. They don't work with the same refs on any night. They make their own schedules.
Correct.
That's an important thing to point out, because when you're watching the game, unless you're slow-mo watching the replay, you don't know who's making foul calls. Important to point out. Michigan is 1-3 in games Lewis Garrison has officiated. What do you make of that?
It's a complete coincidence.
Complete coincidence. He also went head-to-head with Tom Izzo in a game. What do you make of that?
Is Lewis Garrison a great ref? I don't know.
I would say probably not.
Probably not. I know Beilein has had issues with him in the past, I've been told. But do I think Lewis Garrison is against Michigan and John Beilein? No, I don't. I don't think that. And was there a rumor going around that the same crew officiated all the losses or something like that this year? I was asked a bunch of questions about that.
It's just him.
It's just Garrison. Yeah. DJ Karstensen was at two of the losses. Weimer was at one of them, and then kind of just a couple other guys that I don't know if people widely know their names filled out the rest of those. But you're right. It's not crews. These are not conspired things. They are all basically independent contractors who sign on if they get an offer with a league, and they work, basically they get first pick in that league is kind of how it is, the very basic version of explaining it. But then they are held responsible by that league. Rick Boyages is the Big Ten Associate Commissioner for Basketball. He oversees officiating. He grades every single call that is made in every single game. Officials have access to a database that has each other's grades in it. They can see everyone's. We obviously don't have access to that, and that will never happen unless there's a major hack.
Wasn't there a big controversy where some officials broke into the other officials' assignments? I remember this was a big story. A couple guys got banned. It was a whole thing.
Boy,
they claimed it was not hacking because it was just not secured. It was a couple years ago.
That sounds like a Burkhardt excuse right there. If it wasn't coded and secure, then it's not a hack.
It's 100% true. Apparently it doesn't hold up in a
court of college basketball. And not only is every call graded, at the end of the game, the league office does send clips. They basically get video clips the same way these schools do, and they break down every play and every call, and they watch, little 5-second clips or whatever of every single call that's made and how they're graded out, and they do study what they're doing. And there are, from the NCAA office, regular videos that are distributed amongst all the officials of points of emphasis or maybe things that are kind of developing as issues and things like that. I'm trying to think what else. I've been told at halftime, officials watch reviews of their calls, or they watch the videos of calls that have been made, and they see it. Every review that is made goes – the video goes to Rick Boyages' phone, wherever he is. He's at a game pretty much every night, but he sees what's being reviewed across the league. There's a lot that goes into it. Point being, it's not just some ragtag group of guys who are just showing up at games and making calls and leaving. There's a lot that goes into it. This is not me saying that the officials are perfect. It's not me saying that they deserve the benefit of the doubt at all times. I'm just trying to kind of paint a picture of what's actually going on.
What do you think results? So I think this is the third or fourth coach that we've heard say is going to have an in-depth conversation with the league office. What do you think? Is there any net result of that? You think that changes anything? You think we see any of the crew that did that Penn State-Michigan game on another Michigan game for the rest of the year?
I would be very surprised to see Lewis Garrison on a Michigan game for the rest of this year.
And to be fair, he also was not the one who teed up Beilein.
Yes. Which one was it? Was it Seslick or Riley?
It looked like it might have been one of each of them. Okay. I couldn't really tell who. It was hard. They did not have great. I think they had the C team video team at Penn State, so there was not a lot of great shots of what exactly was going on there. But
I would have loved to have been. The real story that night was in the production truck from the BTN van that was outside of Bryce Jordan Center, realizing that they did not have any actual video of what the hell happened in the most controversial point of the game.
And A+ for Robbie Hummel, who would explain every bad call on both ends and try to make it sound like, oh, well, I could kind of see it there. He did a great job of that. He did a great job of saying he disagreed with every call, but made it sound positive.
The check has to clear, man. The check has to clear. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see. I don't know what how John's conversation with the league office will go, obviously. If he gets an explanation, though, I think that should be shared. I know I put a request in. I'd be really curious to see actually what is there and if there is any kind of, I guess, ruling or whatever from the league office, or if it was warranted or what. I'm trying to think of, like, I don't remember them ever making any kind of statement on an ejection or anything like that. So I don't know if there's anything there to it to come out.
The only thing I can think of them making statements on are about, like, weird timing things at the end of games, right, or suspension or something like that.
Right. But in general, so with the way people are, this just seems especially toxic right now, the way people are reacting to every call that's made and individual officials. At the Wisconsin game that you brought up, I mean, people were losing their minds about Hap getting away with a couple things. And he did. There's pictures and clips that certainly look like a foul, but it's like, this is kind of the nature of the game, isn't it? Like,
and the point
there's
is going that
to be
there's
missed calls, and there's missed calls on the other end too.
Yeah, you have clips that, yes, Hap could have been called for more fouls. Mm-hmm. Someone else, if you were taking pictures of them and watching them for the whole first half, they might have been called for some fouls too. Like, you just go back, like, you can't. It's just sort of out of the control of either team, and it really evens out in the end enough to kind of. The plays on the floor, like even in that game at Penn State, Beeling got ejected. There were bad calls. Michigan makes a few shots. They win that game, right? Like,
yeah,
it's just the game is still really in control of the players, even if there's five, six missed calls on both ends of the court. Like, it kind of evens out in the end, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, the loss itself, I think, really boiled down in part to, Penn State coming off that game against Ohio State where they forced 18 turnovers and saw that little 1-2-2 press that they can put out there was really effective in that game, and basically boiled it down to, okay, you know, what are the real odds of us beating Michigan here? It's worth throwing this 1-2-2 out there, because if you go into a half-court game, their offense is so dreadful in the half-court that there's no way that they were going to score enough to beat Michigan. So you had to do something different. They threw the press out. It worked. Michigan ended the game with 12 turnovers, and Xavier Simpson had six of them. From afar, you watched the game far more closely than I did. I've only watched the clips of all the buckets in it, and not the full 40, but is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think it boils down to a couple things. Simpson played one of his worst games of the year, and he really isn't the first point guard. I mean, Penn State has legit perimeter defenders, and Simpson struggled against them. I remember we talked about Cassius Winston struggling against them, and he kind of did not ever find a way to get comfortable. But I think the bigger issue, Michigan gave up 1.13 points per possession on defense against the second worst offense in the Big Ten, and that's just not really where they hang their hat this year. And to get to basically, there's one guy who can shoot on the entire Penn State roster, and you let him make five threes out of eight attempts, that's just not good enough defensively. And then Lamar Stevens just kind of ate him up inside one-on-one. So I think that is probably the more disappointing element. Obviously, you can look at Poole couldn't make shots, Simpson turned it over, the offense kind of stagnated. But if you can't stop Penn State, it's going to be hard to win, because they're built to win ugly. If you give them a few extra buckets, they're, like we said, they make a few threes, you can find yourself in trouble.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't think officiating or Beeline getting tossed excuses the loss. And the other thing being, like, you know, teams are going to have, in this league, you're going to have a day like this. You're going to have a bad loss, so to speak, a bad loss on paper.
It's a bad loss, but it's also a Q1 loss.
Sure, but yeah, and I'm just saying you lose, you know, in terms of the Big Ten standings as opposed to the NCAA tournament resume, you know, you just lose some leeway here. certainly tighten things up the same way that Michigan State's loss at Illinois did. That's kind of the way it goes. So, anything more on the Stripes or the night in State College?
No, we want to talk about, I guess, Maryland a little bit, or you want to get into Michigan State?
Yeah, that Maryland game is huge. Playing really well. Bruno is a monster. Let's start there with Mr. Fernando. How do you see this going?
So I was really down on Fernando last year. I thought he was sort of all airport team type of dude who had really good highlights, made amazing plays, but kind of looked clueless. This year he's just a beast. He's kind of figured everything out, and he is in the right spot a lot more on defense. He's a legit post-up scorer. He's really been a problem. Like, he's one of the best big men in the league, and he looks every bit like kind of the first-round pick that everyone thought he could be. I guess it's probably nice for Turgeon that he came back to be that player for him and not on a back and forth, or a two-way deal, or like a D-League guy, right? So that is really where it starts. I think Anthony Cowan is legit. I know you're not a big fan of him, but he is one of the best point guards in the league, and you have basically a nice kind of combination of that size inside, but also a point guard who can get a shot at any time, can create for others, play out of ball screens, and then a bunch of freshman wings who can shoot the ball, and it's a nice sort of combination. It's an interesting team, and they've kind of gone under the radar. They haven't had a lot of really impressive wins on the road, but they also have like these 15-point wins against decent teams on the road, which is a sign that, hey, they might be pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the difference makers is the Ayala kid, the freshman, who I don't know if anyone really talks about him, but when he comes in and gives him three made threes, he's kind of a – he can be a pivot in a lot of games that can kind of swing some things for them. They do
Ayala and Wiggins are both
– Wiggins was the other one I was going to mention.
Over 40% from three.
Yeah. Those are kind of like, you know, to use beeline parlance, those are kind of the outliers that you need. You can't let them bite you the way that the two guys did in that Wisconsin game, right? Uh-oh, dropping mics, sorry. The Kobe King guy and who the hell was the other one? We always do this.
Aleem Ford.
There you go, thank you.
But I would say Ayala and Wiggins are better players, probably.
And then Jalen Smith is another one who looks like, you know, he's going to develop into he might be one of the best big men in the league next year. He's certainly on his way right now. 6'10 freshman, long and rangy. He'll put up some threes. I don't know if they go in, but he'll put them up. It's an interesting matchup. Michigan's fortunate to have this one at home for sure. They'll make their trip to Xfinity Center later this year, right? They play twice.
Yep. Yeah, they'll go there. They have basically two or four of their last six games now are against Maryland and Michigan State. Right.
So that's a kick in the pants. But what do you project in this one?
I think you have to like Michigan at home. I think it'll be really interesting to see kind of how they handle the too big look in the paint. Maryland's had some issues kind of spacing the floor around those looks. They're getting to that a little more. Michigan obviously has the pieces to kind of lock down on the wings, but do they play Fernando one-on-one, and how does that match up with Teske play out? That'll sort of set the stage either way, I would say, because Michigan loves to play single coverage in the post, but against Penn State that kind of backfired a little bit more than we've seen, and that's a big test for Teske down low.
And I'm kind of curious to see the other front court spot, like you mentioned, you know, when they do go two bigs, the Brazdakis or Livers with Smith. I mean, Smith is 6'10", but he looks like he's like 7 feet tall. Like, he's really, really big and really long. And there's only been a few times that you've really seen Brazdakis defend kind of a true big. And when I asked him about it at what game was it? Shit, he had to defend some true center.
Wisconsin.
Maybe it's that Wisconsin game, yeah. And he said, you know, I've never done that. I'm not exactly I think I can do it. I think I'm strong enough, but it takes kind of some experience to understand really how to do that. Well, he might get himself in some of those spots in this game.
But then
Smith also has to step out on the perimeter. And how does – I haven't scouted him enough or watched quite enough Maryland, you know, that closely to know how he does away from the basket. But how that matchup swings is going to be notable.
Like a lot of big teams, Maryland gives up a lot of threes. They're 12th in the Big Ten in percentage of shots allowed from three-point range. That's generally because you have two big guys in there. That four spot is where you can stretch the court a little bit. That means Michigan needs Ignas Brazdeikis to take and make threes to kind of pull that out. And that will be probably one of the keys to the game, I would say, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Ken Palm's projecting a
67-60 Michigan win.
A 7-point Michigan win? That's a big number. Interesting. I would take Maryland to cover 7. I'll tell you that much. But I do like a Michigan win. I think Xavier Simpson, big bounce back game here. I think he takes out the frustrations of Penn State on Anthony Cowan defensively. And it might be a long day for him. And that's kind of one of those situations where you saw it in the Michigan State-Maryland game. If you can really lock down Cowan and force him into a bad night, everything else kind of falls. So that would kind of be my projection for this one.
Fair enough. I think it starts with right at that spot. And Simpson played very well versus Cowan last year. I mean, Michigan blew him out, I think, mm-hmm. at Maryland late in the season last year, if I recall correctly.
And then Spartans. So, really, are we done on that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Really, really solid win at Wisconsin. Really impressed by Nick Ward. Really impressed by their ability to steal a few baskets. We talked about what they could get in transition, and they accomplished stealing some baskets here and there, especially in the first half of that game. They got out and run, and not as much in the second half, but they just caught Wisconsin, you know, just kind of jogging back a few times and were able to steal, you know, 3 or 4 field goals. And that's a huge difference in a game that, you know, doesn't get into the 70s. So that was a big difference. I thought Cassius Winston had a nice bounce back game. I thought Aaron Henry showed something that they desperately needed. And I think it was a good step in the right direction for this team.
Yeah, there's no bad win at Wisconsin.
Right.
It doesn't matter. Any year, and Michigan State's won, like, what, they haven't lost to Wisconsin in 3 years, something like that. I guess it speaks to how well Michigan State can play defensively still that I think we kind of lost sight of, and they have the best kind of interior defense in the Big Ten, if not the country, and they have all the bodies to throw at Hap, and they got the job done. How many games can Hap go 0-for-6, 1-for-8 at the free throw line before we ding him significantly? Like, that's just like.
So this game basically summed up his entire college career. He scored his 2,000th point of his career, which is a huge accomplishment, and at the same time went 0-for-6 from the foul line and committed 6 turnovers. It was everything that he's been for 4 years in a nutshell. For 40 minutes,
free throws were late, right?
Four of them, I believe, were late. I think he missed 2 in the first half, if I'm remembering correctly. Yeah, I mean, I think he has to be first team all league. I couldn't possibly have him be Big Ten Player of the Year when pretty much every loss, you know, fairly or not, and it's probably not fair, but it's the way it is. Pretty much every loss can be directly tied to him, and that's a really hard spot. I kind of feel like I don't know what you do if you're Greg Gard. I kind of feel bad for the guy when you have this All-American who, at the same time, is just an odd liability in times of great importance. I just don't know what you do with that. And he just never developed anything away from the basket, but he's so good at what he does well. It's just, He's a very confounding player. How many games will he play in the NBA?
I think he'll play a few. His talent does not fit, but it's a unique skill set. I think there's a way that a smart NBA team could use him.
Me too.
He has some ability to pass at that size, to score around the basket. It would take a team kind of gambling and deciding that they're going to, I guess, go after that project, right? You're not going
right.
to hack a hap in the NBA yeah. as much. Like, he's not going to be the focal point, right? So
right, you just don't play him in the last 5 minutes of a game either, right? In the league.
Yeah.
Like, Wisconsin basically has to because everything goes through him, and he's their best defensive player. So what do you do in the last 5 minutes? You're just going to sit him? Like, I don't see how that works.
No, I agree. I don't know. I wouldn't be chomping at the bit to
right.
draft him either. Like, it's a league where it's all about how you can space the floor and how you can shoot. Like, he's not really gonna be.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't fit in that modern basketball. Yeah. What's the biggest takeaway from Michigan State? They really have gotten back on the right track here with the blowout of Minnesota and then a really nice win at Wisconsin. Is there anything that you worry about lingers from that losing streak? Was that losing streak just variability? Are they back rocking and rolling? Like, how do you see them kind of coming together down the stretch?
Yeah, I think they have kind of gotten back on the rails. I thought Nick Ward was excellent in this game. He defended Hap one-on-one. He wasn't a liability. He didn't force Michigan State to have to go to a double team or anything like that. And so then they were able to guard everyone straight up. And Ward not only defended him, but he got his hands on a lot of balls. He stayed with him. He was really under control. Didn't commit any dumb fouls. The only one he had was he forced a play in the second half and was called for a charge when he just did one of those. He just dropped a shoulder and just buried some guy. I think it was Hap. But yeah, it's just a really big difference when he is really just locked in on what his job is on every single possession and doesn't just kind of go to another planet. But so when he's under control and when Cassius Winston's playing like that, they got a lot of good things going. And Kenny Goins, as a three-point shooter, just makes them so much different. He made three threes in this game, including, you know, one of the two biggest shots of the night. And there's no signs that that's going away. And if on any given night, if they can get it from McQuaid or Kenny, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be both. And you don't need both of them. You can't expect both of them to make four threes a night, right? They're just not that level of player. But if one of them does that, they are a different team.
Yeah, he's, I think, 11 of 22 over his last mm-hmm. five games from three. Before that, he was, what, probably 16 of 50 or something like that? 16 of 51?
Yeah.
So that ability for him to stretch the floor changes things. I think you got to look at the job Michigan State did defensively on Trice and Davison because they need kind of that offense from the guard spots
right.
to get going, and they held him to 11 points on 18 shots. You're not going to win when those two guards just get blanked, and that's really, I think, where it starts with beating Wisconsin, and you have to look at a Michigan State backcourt that's not really deep, but really got the job done mm-hmm. defensively there. So I think that's probably something that might not get noticed right away, but just a few playing in Ann Arbor, and to just kind of shut him down is impressive.
So Ohio State coming up this weekend, obviously an important game. Sunday. Oh, and Ohio State has a game tonight. They actually play Illinois at home, and then we'll go to Michigan State on Sunday. So kind of a tight turnaround for Ohio State, while Michigan State gets the luxury of an extra day or two here. But Ohio State's playing well on a three-game winning streak, and, you know, yes, it's Rutgers and Penn State and Indiana, but they have kind of forced themselves probably back into the the healthy side of the bubble, 16-7 overall, 6-6 in the league, and have major opportunities in front of them to turn this year into probably a greater success than people would have projected.
Yeah, it's crazy. They played on January 5th, and Ohio State was 12-1, and their season has really gone down and now back up since then. They kind of fell apart after that loss to Michigan State at home, when that was really a high-profile game. I mean, that seemed like a game Ohio State, and it was back and forth really until late in the second half, and then they went and lost 6 out of 7, including that game. So they're kind of back in a good spot, couple road wins.
The
Wesson Ward battle is probably where you start with this one again.
Totally.
And CJ Jackson also played really well in that first game before he started cramping up, if you remember. So it'll be interesting to see kind of if he can go the whole game and what kind of impact he gives them.
The interesting thing about this matchup is you have to go with Ward Wesson, because last year it was kind of the freshman trying to go against the guy, but these guys are basically even now, and Wesson was more than up to the challenge in the last matchup, and was pretty darn impressive. I'm trying to remember, that was that late surge by Michigan State after Ohio State tied it. I'm trying to remember if they actually took the lead in the last like 10 minutes or not, but it was a really good game for a stretch there, and Michigan State was really impressive in the second half. It was kind of after the game went a little bit, just kind of swung in Ohio State's way late in the first half, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, they kind of weathered the storm. Everything went Ohio State's way in that last 3 minutes, right. And then I just remembered Caleb Wesson shooting a terrible three late in the game that turned all the momentum to Michigan State down the stretch.
You're not a fan of you're not a buyer on Caleb Wesson 3-point shooting.
Not in crunch time. Not when they need an actual basket. Right. But
what if he's open though?
Probably open for a reason.
He's a better 3-point shooter than John Teske.
I don't know if I would want to drop a John Teske 3 in that situation either.
It's happened though. I don't know. I think Wesson's 3-point shooting is underrated.
This was a bad shot. I know he has a good percentage. This was a bad shot.
All right.
Everyone shoots a bad percentage on bad shots.
But Ward forced him into he fouled him out, and that's kind of that's a major factor in this battle.
Every game,
right?
For Caleb Wesson.
Who picks up the first foul when they start banging. But then, there's also the very good chance that those two cancel each other out, right? So now you go to the backcourt, and it's Luther Muhammad and CJ Jackson and Cassius Winston and Matt McQuaid. And those are huge matchups. Muhammad's been doing some good things here and there. And Andre Wesson's been giving him some good minutes. He obviously had that major dunk at the end of the game last weekend at Indiana. That was the deciding play, which was drawn up by Holtman and was a thing of beauty, but he put up 15 in the last two games for them, and he's having kind of a nice uptick here at the end of the year after I think people kind of maybe forgot about him a little bit. He was really quiet there for stretches of the season.
Yeah, they can do some different things where they play smaller, and they had to build that kind of arsenal when Kyle Young was injured. I know he's back now, but sometimes that might actually be effective against Michigan State if you can spread them out a little bit and start slipping screens and stuff like that. So that is sort of an interesting dynamic that I don't know that they really even had when they played earlier in the year. They kind of stuck to their Wesson lineup or Kyle Young at the five. And they have kind of an extra trick up their sleeve that they can do in whether it's late game situations, you want to go to a switching defense. It's hard to probably defend with that look against Michigan State, but it's something to at least watch for. And they'll actually put the older but smaller Wesson at the five offensively, and he can move around a lot, cut, do all these different things that can make it tough to guard for another, like a true big.
Did you watch Was Kyle Young back for that Indiana game? Can you remind me?
Kyle Young's played the last two games.
Last two games. Since he's come back, have they gone back to strictly playing man, or have they still shown that zone? Do you know?
I do not know. I did not see the whole Indiana game.
For any Michigan State fans who have not followed this, when Young went out, they started playing some 2-3 zone to make up for kind of basically Caleb Wesson's lack of mobility, probably as being the number one determining factor on why it was necessary. But proved effective a couple times, notably a win at Nebraska. They showed it a lot against Michigan and had varying success and problems with it. But, you know, that is something that they have in the back pocket. If Michigan State is not, you know, scoring in transition and getting into the half-court game, they might show it off makes. So it's also a hard thing to set up against Michigan State because they look to score on makes and misses so quickly. So I don't know what they can
actually
do with it.
Zero possessions of zone defense in the Indiana game.
Okay, so maybe that's the answer.
They've gone away from it a bit. Yeah. I can check the and then Michigan State's a hard team to zone because they have a lot of shooters too.
If you're trying to transition back to defense and worrying about getting in position for a zone, they might just pick you apart by going to the basket. So we'll see on that. But Ohio State's still kind of plagued by turnovers. 21% in league play. That's the worst. In the conference, so another thing to keep an eye on, and
the worst live ball steal percentage. So they don't just turn it over; they give up steals, which is not really what you want to do to Michigan State's transition offense,
right? And rarely an advantage for Michigan State having the winning the turnover battle, but this is actually a game that might do it. And if that's the case, this could actually be a runaway, in my opinion. I think KenPom has it as a 12-point game. That actually sounds pretty right to me. I think State kind of jumps on them a little bit in this game. They're feeling good about themselves. Like I said, Ohio State has a tight turnaround on the road. I'm sure Breslin will be cooking pretty good. So, yeah, I think it could be a pretty healthy Michigan State win.
I would agree with that. Ohio State does have that ability to just play a lockdown defensive game every once in a while. So maybe you see a low scoring game, but I don't know that they did not really contain Michigan State's offense at all at home. And I don't know if they can do it on the road.
But who are the officials going to be?
Uh-oh. Well, whoever does the Michigan game the day before, right? They can get up to East Lansing. Sure. It's easy travel.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone can be mad at the same people for the Monday pod. It'll be beautiful.
Nice. I like it.
Chris Holtman is on the list of coaches who have filed an official complaint with the league office this year.
What did he file a complaint for?
He was mad about Caleb Wesson getting called for fouls every time. Remember that?
He was mad that his 270-pound center who just throws his body around is being called for fouls? That's what you're telling me?
He still is being called for fouls all the time and gets mad about it too. So what are you going to do?
Well, maybe play with some tact.
6.2 fouls per 40 minutes for Caleb Wesson. That's an impressive number.
Wow, that is an impressive number. but he also draws a lot. He draws 7.3 per 40. Oh, you're talking about league play.
Big Ten
play. Okay. Do you got anything else for this episode?
We're wrapping it up. We're good.
I wanted to keep it to a tight 45 for the midweek.
Keeping it tight for the midweek, all right.
Well, cause I wanted to do the draft, but you kind of wussed out, it seems.
I've got my whole notes over here. I was ready to go.
Well, okay, so when should we do that?
We could do that next week, I guess. Well, what's...
Next week, there's kind of a game
next weekend.
Next week's
going to be the Michigan State, Michigan, so that's not going to fly.
The next week's midweek pod is the Super Bowl pod.
Yeah. I didn't realize that was next week.
Maybe we'll do it the week after as we approach March. So
we can do it leading into the All Big Ten sort of thing, and we can say that this is our
– All right.
We're actually building a winning team. So that'll work.
What Dylan and I are going to do, we're each going to draft our own teams for the NCAA, like what team we would want to build for the NCAA tournament. So not – you know, statistics-based, not like a fantasy team, whatever, but like actually trying to build a team that we think could win the national championship out of Big Ten players. It will be riveting. Yeah. Trust me. That's just, it's big time content coming your way. So we appreciate you listening. Be sure to read umhoops.com with full preview coverage of this weekend's Maryland game, and maybe try to find some Zapruder video of the Beeline ejection. Maybe it's, I don't know if it's out there. Someone surely had a camera phone. Still,
I don't know if there are enough people at the game to have a camera phone.
Good
going.
Point. You got to get that video though, and get the embed on UM Hoops. That's a lot of clicks sitting there for you. So check out his site and all the great content that Dylan does. Check out theathletic.com for our national college basketball coverage, and Michigan and Michigan State from yours truly. We really appreciate you listening. Rate, review, share it with your friends.
Subscribe.
And subscribe. And be sure to tip your bartenders and your servers. Thanks.